This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua En Teck. The Malaysian Employers Federation predicted at the start of the year that some 50,000 employees would be laid off this year. This represents a significant jump from the average of 35,000 in the past 3 years. And so in light of this, what do you need to know about what happens during a retrenchment? I have lawyer Sivagami Sivalingam here to explain. Siva, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Not a very pleasant topic, but it's a necessary one, I think, to address. This subject reminds me of a book, Up in the Air, by Walter Kern. It was adapted in 2009 into a film starring George Clooney and Anna Kendrick. And I want to play you a clip and get you to tell me whether or not the tone or how they portray someone getting retrenched is reflective of what happens in Malaysia.
I mean, is there something I can do differently here?
This is not an assessment of your productivity. You gotta try not to take this personally. Stephen, I want you to review this packet. Take it seriously. I think you're gonna find a lot of good answers in here.
I'm sure this is gonna be very helpful. A packet. Thank you. Packet.
Well, anybody who ever built an empire or changed the world set where you are right now. And it's because they sat there they were able to do it. That's the truth. I'm going to need your key card. Great. Okay. Now, would you take the day, go get together your personal things, and then tomorrow you get yourself some exercise. You go out for a jog, you give yourself some routines, and pretty soon you find your legs.
How do I get in touch with you?
Don't worry, we'll be in touch with you soon. This is just the beginning.
So did that scene capture what it's like to have a conversation about retrenchment?
Actually, sorry to disappoint En Teck, but the lawyers who are out in the industry, we don't really deal with the employees who are being retrenched face-to-face. The most we will do is we'll consult with our clients in terms of giving them the correct way of retrenching their employees and also possibly reviewing the packet. So the packet that was referred in the clip, I think exists because our clients would want a very uniformed way of disseminating information down to their employees who are being retrenched. We don't want a situation where there are inconsistencies in terms of information that is being disseminated out. So yeah, the packet.
That's the correct terminology? Is the industry jargon?
No, it's not industry jargon. I just use that because it was referred to in the movie as such. But normally there will be a Q&A, FAQs, you know, which would be handed out to employees who may be facing retrenchment or if there's a reorganization in the organization. Information will be disseminated out to all employees, so you don't know whether or not you are being selected to be retrenched or otherwise. But that kind of a blanket information may be disseminated out by an FAQ.
Mm-hmm. I think most people would assume it only happens during times of economic downturn or when the company is not doing well. But for a company to want to retrench its workers, under what circumstances can they do it?
Okay. You are absolutely correct in assuming that a retrenchment exercise would be done during an economic downturn or when times are tough, generally. However, we have seen cases where you don't need the workforce anymore when you outsource a particular function, let's just say. So you no longer need that person to be in your organization. So what do you do then? Of course, you have to retrench them because their job no longer exists. So what your organization has done is that they have outsourced that particular task out. Like, for example, things that are seeing an increase in outsource would be IT functions, HR functions maybe, even finance functions or cleaners. So rather than you having an in-house cleaner, you outsource it to a company, And therefore, you know, your cleaner job that's existing in your organization no longer exists. Mm-hmm. So there is no longer a need for that kind of a position. Therefore, the person is redundant. And therefore, the person will be retrenched.
How do you prove that redundancy?
So yes, there are legal questions that a company may have to prove at the end of the day at court, right? The first question I think the courts would generally ask is that whether or not there was an actual redundancy situation which actually justified the retrenchment. Okay, I can't just say that, yeah, well, my earnings or profits for the quarter has gone down and I'm going to embark on a retrenchment exercise. There are two schools of thoughts. One says that you don't actually have to suffer loss before you embark on a retrenchment exercise. But we have seen of late the industrial court seem to have taken a very conservative approach to say that, no, you can't do that. First question you'll ask is whether or not there was a need for retrenchment. If there was no need, then you will face an uphill battle trying to convince the court that your retrenchment was justified or with good faith, done in good faith.
What does this need refer to?
That's the beauty of this industry. Everything depends on the facts. It could be monetary. It could be economic. It could also be a situation where the job no longer exists. Technology has, you know, developed in such a way that I no longer need this person. You know, like things that can be automated. For example, I'm just giving you a rough example. Hotel industry. Let's just say the booking. Person, right? You don't need a physical person to be there anymore. Everything is done online now. So do I then still need to have a person standing to take your bookings? There's no need anymore.
Right. So because you work in this area, what are your thoughts about the MEF's prediction that 50,000 employees would be laid off? Is that the numbers that you anticipate would be in the ballpark too?
Actually, the anticipated numbers, they are just anticipated at this point in time, right? Yeah. But from the way things are going, we are getting a lot more queries in terms of retrenchment with our corporate clients.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to suggest that it's in line with the MEF's prediction that the number of people who will be retrenched this year are on the increase.
Yeah. And is that because of economic downturn, or is it because times are changing and workers' skill sets have to be adapted, so some jobs are being phased out?
I think it's a combination of both. Skill sets being phased out is one thing. At this point in time, you know, the question that employers always ask is, you know, what is the value add? What kind of value add do you bring to my organization? So it's more of not only reskilling, it's also upskilling, right? And also one person can maybe carry out two or three different functions.
Right.
Yeah. So therefore, I don't need that many workers anymore. So it's a myriad of reasons, I think.
So it sounds straightforward enough. When does retrenchment becomes a problem?
When the retrenchment is not done correctly, of course. How it can fall into that category would be if, let's just say, an employer is using retrenchment as an excuse to actually get rid of an employee, right? When the retrenchment is not done in good faith. So even when you're doing retrenchment, you can't just, you know, drop some names into a hat and then randomly pick them up. You can't. So as I was mentioning earlier, the first question is whether or not there was a genuine need for a retrenchment exercise, right? That's the first one. Then the second one is whether or not the person's job is actually redundant. So I may have 100% of my job, right? Only 80% has gone away. So I've got remaining 20%. And what my employer does is they take that remaining 20% and redistribute it to the existing employees. And then my employer tells me, sorry, Siva, you're redundant. Mm. The courts have increasingly demonstrated that cannot be done. The person's job must go away 100% before they can be retrenched or be identified to be redundant, right? For me personally, I think that that is a little bit onerous, and onerous on the employers, because whose job in this day and age will go away 100%? And the employers ought to be given the liberty to be able to exercise their prerogative in terms of taking the remainder, remaining job functions and redistributing, you know, amongst existing employees. But yeah, that's how the courts have started to, or actually that's how the courts seem to be moving towards. So making someone retrenching someone seems to be quite hard in Malaysia.
Right. And is that not a good thing, to make it hard for a company to retrench someone? Because if it's easy, then it's more susceptible to abuse, I would assume.
Correct. You are absolutely correct. But in Malaysia, there is when someone is identified to be redundant and to be retrenched, there would be compensation that would be given, right? So I think it is a very fine balance between the rights of the employers and also the rights of the employees. Whilst I absolutely agree with you that if they make retrenchment very, very easy, it is prone to abuse. Whilst I agree with that. But on the flip side, if you make retrenchment so difficult where 10 cases go to court, 10 employers won't be able to justify the retrenchment, who is going to come to Malaysia to invest? Because it's such a nightmare getting, I use this term loosely, getting rid of employees when the business is no longer making money. Why would I come to Malaysia? I can go somewhere else where the laws are not as strict.
I'm speaking today to lawyer Sivagami Sivalingam about retrenchment. Up next, I'll ask her about what rights do the employees have to challenge retrenchment. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. In the studio with me, lawyer Sivagami Sivalingam, talking about retrenchment. We've talked about retrenchment from the perspective of the employer, and you mentioned the courts a few times. How often do decisions on retrenchment get challenged in courts? Or another way to put this is, how often do employees challenge the decision by their employers to retrench them?
Well, I don't have hard numbers for it, but in Malaysia, every single employee who has lost their job has the statutory right to go to the Industrial Relations Department to lodge a complaint, to allege or to complain that their dismissal from the organisation that they were with is without just cause and excuse. So they have that right to go and do that. After that complaint is lodged, then there will be some queries or inquiries in the background. There will be some conciliation between the employer and the employee, facilitated by the Industrial Relations Department officer. If that conciliation fails, then a report will be sent, will be written and sent to the Human Resource Minister. The minister will then review the facts and then decide whether or not the matter is fit to be referred to the Industrial Court or otherwise. Yeah. So it's not as of right, oh, I want to sue my employer, I'm going to the court and inform the court, okay, I'm going to sue my employer. No. So there is a process. So at the conciliation stage, sometimes matters get settled. Sometimes, you know, the employer said, you know what, we'll take you back. So then they have their job back, or, you know, or a settlement is achieved, so it doesn't get to the industrial court. So therefore, that kind of a question, I don't think we'll be able to get an accurate number on how many percentage of people actually challenge the retrenchment decision by the company.
Is it 60 days that the employee have?
Correct.
To 60
days
bring the case?
Yeah. From the time of dismissal or from the time that they knew of the dismissal.
So what would be considered fair or just or adequate compensation?
There are two categories of employees when we are looking at compensation. The first category is employees that actually fall under the Employment Act, the ambit of the Employment Act. So these are people who earn 2,000 ringgit or less, or are engaged in manual labour. Actually, there are much more, but for the purposes of this, this would be an easier way to go about it. People who earn 2,000 ringgit or less, or people who are engaged in manual labour, doesn't matter how much they earn. Or people who supervise this group of people, doesn't matter how much they earn. So these people are actually, their retrenchment benefits are actually encapsulated in the termination and layoff benefits. And then there would be some minimum amounts, which has already been stipulated in law, and it would be and payment would have to be in accordance with that. So the second category of employees are people who are not covered by the Employment Act. So people who earn more than 2,000 ringgit, people who are in, say, management or, you know, any other jobs, not in manual labour, not carrying out manual labour. So these people, what needs to be paid out to them may be in their employment contract, may be in the company's handbook. But if these are silent on their retrenchment benefits or how it should be computed and paid out, then usually what we would advise our clients is that to go back on the Employment Act employees, the same way of calculating. Mm. So that way you know you are not in contravention of the law, because the law only protects, statute only protects employees who earn 2,000 ringgit or less and those who are engaged in manual labour. But the statute does not stipulate what will happen to those who are not covered by the Employment Act ambit. Right, so the way the law has developed, case law has developed in courts, is that the courts have said that no, it can't be that these people don't get anything at all. So something must be paid out to them. So based on that, usually best practice, what we would do is we would advise our clients to just fall back to the layoff and termination benefits regulations, whatever that's in there.
Are retrenchment policies or benefits usually written in an employee's contract?
Sometimes they are, because even the employment handbook forms a part of the terms and conditions of an employee. So, and also policies in the company, you know, that also forms a part and parcel of the employee's terms and conditions of employment. So, yeah, it may be written somewhere.
Right. So retrenchment doesn't always just affect employees who are nearing retirement age?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
In fact, it will cost a lot more to retrench someone who has been in service for so long.
Right.
Yeah, and also the selection process when it comes to selecting a person to be retrenched, the last person who joins is the first person to go.
Mm. Last in, first out.
Last in, first out, correct. So that is generally the criteria, the selection criteria that we will advise our clients to follow. But there are cases where organizations don't follow this particular last in, first out rule, right? But they can depart from that the LIFO principle, but they have got to justify. Mm. And the selection process has got to be fair. It's applicable to everyone across the board.
There is also a rule, I think, about how if you are to lay off workers, foreign workers should be considered first before local workers.
That is in the guideline, yes.
Yeah. So for MNCs, for example, would the expats face retrenchment before the locals?
I think it's down to a question of need. If I still need that person, then it can't be that the person is redundant. If the person is not redundant, then I can't retrench the person.
So mutual separation schemes or voluntary separation schemes, do they essentially have the same impact in terms of costs compared to retrenchment?
It depends on the the calculation, right? It depends on what the employers are saying, that if you do take this mutual separation scheme or voluntary separation scheme, how would you be paid out? How much would be paid out to you? I think it all depends on how much the employers are saying that it's worth, you see?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier that the laws or legislations must be conducive enough for companies or investors to pour money into our country. And it has to be fair to them, employers or job creators. But on the flip side, how well do we protect the rights of our workers and employees? Because without adequate protection, maybe this country is not a very attractive place to work in.
But that's the thing in tech. No one can guarantee you that you will have a job until the end of days. So it really depends on the economic situation in Malaysia. Hopefully, you know, it will remain conducive for both employers and employees. I think it's not a case where we have to bully one party or we have to oppress one party in order for the other party to be successful. No, I think it's a balance here. I think the situation here is balanced.
Mm. Didn't you think it was too onerous, perhaps a tad bit tedious for companies to comply with what would be termed fair?
Correct. It is, but it is the reality of the situation here. Mm-hmm. It's the way the laws have developed. It's the way the statute is being drafted. So employers cannot run away from that. Employers bear the burden of proof, usually, to prove that a dismissal was justified, a retrenchment was justified. That we can't depart from that.
Is there an alternative model somewhere where it's easier for companies to, or the burden of proof is lesser?
There are alternatives out there, which is, I give you an extreme example, would be the US. Mm-hmm. Just as long as I pay you your notice, then it's fine. I don't need to justify why I'm asking you to leave.
Right.
So that, on the flip side, is the extreme. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with as well.
Are we on the other side of the extreme? Like what the system we have right now?
I think the system we have right now is designed to protect employees, which addresses your concerns of otherwise the employees would be bullied or you know, so their rights are protected.
Why is the US model not good in your opinion?
I wouldn't say it's not good, but it's just not what we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine, you know, coming to work and then your employer tells you, here's your 2 months notice, as per your contract, leave. There is no job security at all whatsoever. In Malaysia, we have security of tenure, something called security of tenure. So you don't have to worry, do I still have a job tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't have to worry 2 weeks from now whether I still have a job. No, we don't have to worry about things like that. So as an employee, that's really good.
Can you expand on this security of tenure? What does it mean? How much security do we have?
If you want an ironclad security in tech, we don't have that. Before you ask me that. But we have security in the sense that I must have a reason before I ask you to leave.
Okay.
The employers must have a reason before they ask you to leave. It can't be that I don't like your face. Please leave.
Yeah.
So...
I guess the next step once you retrench a worker is outplacement services, isn't it? Are we required, or does Malaysia require companies based here to have an outplacement agency?
No, in law there is no requirements for an employer to have outplacement services for people who are retrenched. But what I have seen increasingly in the MNC, in my clients, is that even before you are retrenched, right? They inform you, look, you seem to be on the verge of being retrenched. Please look for alternatives. The notice period, please look for alternatives. If you find any alternative jobs within this time, then you won't be retrenched, but otherwise, we will have no choice but to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Far and few in between provide outplacement services after the person is retrenched. Rarely. I won't say that they don't exist, but I would say rarely.
So recently we introduced the employment insurance scheme, and it seems to be another buffer for employees who are faced with layoffs. What are your thoughts on this? Would you consider this as retrenchment benefits too?
At least they will assist. It will assist the people who have just been retrenched to be on their feet for a few more months. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a step in the right direction.
Employers, but this is from the Malaysian Employers Federation, Datuk Samsudin Badan, who says this is another example of how it makes the country unfriendly to businesses. Would you agree with that?
I think a balance needs to be struck, and if the cost is minimal in terms of ensuring that employees are not left out in the lurch, I think it is a cost that is fixed and can be factored into your business model, and these are things to be taken into account before you invest in Malaysia. It's not a case where how much I need to put in is a big question. So it's a variable. It varies so much that I cannot factor into the cost of doing business here. So I think that, yeah, it's not really a big hurdle or a big push for foreign direct investment to come in and invest in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. I think the cost is minimal, yeah.
So if there's one thing that you want listeners to take away from today's show about retrenchment, what should we know, absolutely must know about retrenchment?
When it comes to retrenchment, unfortunately, it's not even about whether I can bring value add, whether I can do 3-person's job. Sometimes it's just the entire plant is shutting down. You have no choice but to leave.
Right. In those instances, there is nothing to be done, right? If a company is uprooting or a company is shutting down or a company bankrupts, what remedy or cause of recourse do the employee have?
Nothing. That's why I say it's a really, really depressing topic to start with. But, in terms of the matter going to the industrial court and the industrial court needing to see whether or not the retrenchment is justified or otherwise, right, with just cause or not, the remedy that is available to the employee is to be reinstated to their former position. If the entire plant shuts down, there is no more reinstatement. Reinstatement is no longer possible. And therefore, that particular remedy no longer exists, cannot exist.
What if pay or salary was owed?
The employee will then have to join the line of creditors against the company. It's quite unfortunate.
Mm. Okay. Thank you very much for being here. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.